Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The cover photograph at Newsweek magazine is enough to get your attention this week. The title is Womb for Rent, The Complex World of Surrogate Mothers. The whole topic of surrogate motherhood has been increasingly in the news because it has become a more popular option for some people. It turns out that there are at least more than 1,000 babies born every year by surrogacy. And because it is an unregulated reality in most states, the expectation is that the total number of babies born to surrogate mothers is much higher than that. Then we have a report coming out of India indicating that a lot of impoverished women are turning themselves into wombs for rent, exactly what is implied by the title, the cover story in Newsweek magazine. So we're going to put this together, and Newsweek says it wanted to look at the hidden world of surrogacy in terms of what was really going on. Well, I think it's safe to say that it's something we need to be very aware of as Christians, thinking about how we would respond to the question about the morality of surrogate motherhood. We'll be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You might also want to go to the website for Newsweek magazine. Just take a look at the article, and that's going to be the background for our conversation today. In other matters in the news, Richard Dawkins, perhaps the world's most famous scientist and the world's most famous atheist right now, is suggesting in The Scotsman, that's the major newspaper out of Edinburgh, that the issue of creationism is growing fast in the United Kingdom. Now, what makes this very interesting is that when you talk to people from Europe, they talk about America as being the exception, with so many people who are creationists, who reject evolution. You have major figures such as Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times writing op-ed pieces saying he's absolutely shocked, indeed not only shocked but appalled at the fact that the vast majority of Americans simply do not accept the account of evolution concerning the origin of the world. Now in The Scotsman, Richard Dawkins is suggesting that, quote, I think a lot of it has come over from America and Australia. He said this, I've spoken to a lot of science teachers in schools here in Britain who are finding an increasing number of students coming to them and saying they are young Earth creationists. Now, this is a belief that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and it is such a staggering mistake that it is very concerning to hear this. It is no small error. It is equivalent, he says, to someone believing, despite the evidence, that the width of North America from one coast to the other is only 7.8 yards. Now, what I find very, very interesting here is that, of course, when you look at this, you wonder, where did he come up with such a metaphor as this? Where did this analogy come from? It isn't any more based in science than a lot of what Richard Dawkins says that people think must be credible because he is a scientist. I like what Alvin Plantinga, the philosopher at the University of Notre Dame, says about Richard Dawkins' book on God. He says he would call the thought patterns in it sophomoric, but that would be an insult to sophomores everywhere. In other words, we have a general principle of intellectual integrity here, and that is that just because you are an expert in one area of life does not mean that you are an expert in another. And when you have someone like Richard Dawkins, he may be someone who has some interesting theories about what's going on in the cell, but when he gets to the larger worldview pictures, he's clearly way out of line, making claims that simply are without any kind of scientific basis. Now, there's something very interesting here, and that has to do with the fact that when Richard Dawkins was making these comments, he was in the George Square Theater. He was there appearing with Richard Holloway, the former Bishop of Edinburgh. Now, this is the perfect pairing. Here you have the world's most famous atheist appearing with the retired Bishop of the Church of England there in Edinburgh, who, frankly, is practically another atheist. And we are told here that they regaled the two of them together, a crowd of 480, that entertained them with a fascinating discussion on religion, and that's about what was going on here. Both of them said that they were concerned about creationism and fundamentalism in Great Britain, as if it's something new. Let's remember that what we're talking about here are people that hold to what the Christian Church has taught for 2,000 years. The anomaly, the oddity, is not that people believe this, but that people do not. And that's what's really bothering, irritating, driving to consternation people like Richard Dawkins, but not only Richard Dawkins, but also Richard Holloway. William Salatin is out in an article with Slate Magazine. He's one of the most interesting writers on bioethics in America today, suggesting that sex selection abortions are back and are increasing, back in the news for sure. He writes this: what's new is the combination of ease, safety, and privacy with which you can do it now. This is a fundamental dynamic between technology and culture. Technology can coax cultures one way or the other by making it easier to do what you want to do with less difficulty and without other people knowing about it. He cites the fact that 2 days ago, economists Douglas Almond and Lena Edlund published an article in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences examining the ratio of male to female births in U.S.-born children of Chinese, Korean, and Asian Indian parents. Now, we cited the same research, pointed to the same thing, but it's very interesting now to have someone looking at this research from the standpoint of William Salatin's own worldview. And again, I respect his reporting. I think it's very honest. I know where he's coming from. I think he's one of the most insightful writers in bioethics. We come from a very different worldview. And I think that's what makes it all the more interesting. When he sees this as something that is at least of concern, even to people who are more secular, well, that ought to be of concern to us for sure. He says this: there's no plausible, innocent explanation for this enormous and directionally abnormal shift in probability. The authors conclude that the numbers are indeed, quote, evidence of sex selection, most likely at the prenatal stage. Welcome to the brave new world. Other interesting things going on. It'll tell you a whole lot about the secularization of the Netherlands, generalized to the issue of the secularization of Europe, when you hear that Dutch Catholics trying to explain the recently passed season of Lent tried to explain it to their own young people as, quote, a Christian Ramadan. In other words, Catholic young people in the Netherlands are more familiar with Islam because of the growing influence of Islam in the Netherlands than they are with Catholicism. And even as I am certainly not Roman Catholic, I find that to be a very fascinating window into the secularization of a generation there in Northern Europe. Martin van der Kuyl, director of Catholic charity Vanaskanti, there in Holland, said the fact that we use a Muslim term is related to the fact that Ramadan is a better known concept among young people than Lent. That says, indeed, a very great deal. Meanwhile, the Telegraph in Great Britain is reporting that husbands with multiple wives will get the go-ahead to claim extra welfare benefits, which is a way of recognizing polygamy without legalizing it. And what's interesting to note here is that that arrangement in the United Kingdom is probably, almost assuredly, spreading elsewhere throughout Europe, and there are those who believe that similar efforts will soon be underway in the United States. Not to allow persons to marry multiple wives who are here, at least not yet. Although the argument for same-sex marriage, as can clearly be demonstrated, is the argument that would open the door for polygamy. It's inevitable. But it is also interesting to note that because of immigration, there are people who are moving to both the United Kingdom and Europe, and also you'd add that to the United States, who are coming with plural wives. And it's interesting to note that increasing numbers of governments are deciding to recognize those marriages as legitimate. Zach Dunlap of Oklahoma was declared brain dead after an accident. Doctors were preparing to harvest his organs for transplant. The 21-year-old was soon to be dismembered, as happens in terms of at least the removal of crucial organs and tissues. And these days, with transplantation, a great deal of the body can be used. He had been declared brain dead, but when doctors began to remove the organs and tissues, he began moving his foot and his hand. It turns out that very soon he was sent home to continue his recovery. Quote, I feel pretty good, he said, just last week. There's some other interesting things in the news. On this program some time ago, we dealt with the fact that many hotels, at least some, many in terms of magnitude, but not in terms of percentage, are taking Bibles out of the room. As you are very familiar, most hotel rooms for a very long time, because of the Gideons and the work of other organizations, but primarily the Gideons, there's been a Bible in the hotel nightstand in the table beside the bed, which is available to those who are guests of the hotel. We dealt just a few weeks ago with the fact that there are some hotels, and as is reported, an increasing number of hotels that are removing the Bibles. Now, there is an entire firm known as Provenance Hotels, owns several hotels in Oregon, Washington State, and also one in Nashville, Tennessee, that is breaking away, according to the Nashville, Tennessee, and breaking away from a longstanding tradition of placing Bibles from Gideon's International in its room. Instead, they're going to offer those who stay at their hotels a, quote, spiritual menu, end quote, which will include other literary offerings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and books on Scientology. No, once again, at least today in our review of some of these issues in the news, there's a whole lot more here than first meets the eye. When you have Catholic leaders in the Netherlands that have to refer to Lent as Ramadan because their own young people are more familiar with Islam than Catholicism, and when you have a hotel firm in America taking the Bible out of the room and putting in instead a spiritual menu that will include the Book of Mormon, the Bible, the Quran, and books on Scientology, folks, we're living in a very different America than most of us knew, even very recently. Back to talk about the ethics of surrogate mothers. Call us today on the Albert Mueller Program. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. When you go to the local bookstore, maybe even the supermarket, your local discount store, as you're walking through the store, you're likely to see the week's news magazines. And if you are alert to what's going on in the culture, you will pay attention. Not only to the magazines, but especially in a very focal way on the cover stories, because the decisions made in the roughly 50 editions of these magazines that come out each year, the decisions made by editors about what is worthy of the cover of these magazines is really something of importance. I want to tell you why. It's a little media backgrounder here. An awful lot of these magazines are sold point of sale. So a good deal of the profit or the income that comes in by revenue to these magazines comes by people who see the cover story and decide they're going to buy that issue. They're not normal subscribers. You don't have to have fascinating covers for subscribers. You have to have fascinating covers for people who are going to buy them point of sale, just on impulse. Well, the picture of Newsweek this week on the cover is of a woman with her shirt pulled up showing her pregnant abdomen. The words are these, womb for rent, the complex world of surrogate mothers. There's an asterisk. You follow the asterisk and it says, and surprisingly, a lot of them are military wives. A fascinating story here. Newsweek magazine's editors explained that they did this because they think that the whole idea of surrogacy is foreign and confusing to many Americans. John Meacham, who we had on this program, the editor of Newsweek, says this, the idea of surrogacy makes many people uncomfortable. Some conservatives find it unnatural, while liberals say it exploits women. But our reporting, says Mr. Meacham, destroyed a lot of popular preconceptions. What amazed me about this story was the kindness of many of the women involved, the sense of empowerment, daring, and duty, and the fact that for many, the greatest satisfaction, delight even, came from giving a child to those unable to carry or deliver them themselves. That last sentence is from one of the co-authors of the article. When you get inside the cover story, the front page of the story is entitled The Curious Lives of Surrogates. The article is by Lorraine Ali and Raina Kelly, two experienced reporters for Newsweek. It is a well-written, very compelling story about surrogate motherhood. Now, I say it's well-written and very informative. It's also very puzzling for some of the things it asserts and for a great deal of what it doesn't say. So let's get right to the issue. What in the world is surrogacy? You're talking about a woman who carries a baby to term for another. It could be for another couple, as is most famously the case. And most people think about surrogate mothers. They think about what is probably the classic expectation, and that is that a fertilized ovum or a fertilized egg is put into the womb of a mother, of a woman, you should say, who then becomes the mother of the child in order to carry it for term, either for a couple that is unable to conceive and carry a baby to term, the woman is not, or some other usually physical circumstances, the expectation that would prevent the wife who would be the mother of the child from actually carrying the child. So you have that perhaps as the classic expectation of surrogacy, but surrogacy is a lot more complicated than that because, for instance, an awful lot of the people who are requesting surrogacy, hiring women to do this, are not actually couples at all, not married couples. They can be same-sex couples, in particular gay male couples, because by definition, gay male couples cannot carry a child to term, neither one of the partners, quite obviously. And then you look at the fact that there are single men. In fact, one who is reported in this article with Newsweek magazine this week that has hired a surrogate because he wants to be a dad but has no wife, and no natural mother. Now, as Newsweek makes clear, in what amounts to the second paragraph in the story, even as surrogacy is what they described as an act of love, it is also a financial transaction. Now, one of the interesting aspects of the Newsweek article is that it demonstrates who comes together in this kind of transaction. They ask the question, what kind of woman would carry a child to term only to hand him over moments after birth? Surrogates challenge our most basic ideas about motherhood and call into question what we've always thought of as an unbreakable bond between mother and child. It's no wonder, I'm reading here from the article, many conservative Christians decry the practice as tampering with the miracle of life, while far-left feminists liken gestational carriers to prostitutes who degrade themselves by renting out their bodies. Now, you heard, embedded in that quotation, the new word that is more preferred, you might say more preferable by those who are in this transactional business, and that is what you heard of as gestational carriers, not surrogate mothers. The word mother here becomes problematic just in terms of the public relations, if nothing else. So they become known as gestational carriers. Rumors, Newsweek acknowledges, circulate that self-obsessed, shallow New Yorkers have their babies by surrogate to avoid stretch marks. The newspaper, the news magazine also reports that much of Europe bans the practice, and 12 states, including New York, New Jersey, and Michigan, refuse to recognize surrogacy contracts, period. Now, that's something that's also very interesting. Those are not three states from the Bible Belt, New York, New Jersey, and Michigan. They, along with nine other states, refuse to recognize the contractual basis of surrogacy. On the other hand, in the past 4 years, some states have done the other, and that is to have passed laws legalizing surrogacy. In the past 5 years, four states, Texas, Illinois, Utah, and Florida, have passed laws legalizing surrogacy. I find the fact that Utah is on that list, again, very interesting. So this report does turn some preconceptions on the head. According to the Society for Assisted Reproduction Technology, last year there were about 1,000 surrogate births. However, Newsweek reports that there were at least 400 surrogate births in 2007 in just the very brief and small span of their study with some limited agencies that are actually dealing with this. They report the numbers vary because at least 15% of clinics, and there are dozens of them across the United States, don't report the numbers at all. Now, when you look at surrogacy, one of the interesting things is that the definition is very important. Again, I began with the classic case, what most people think of, and that is you have a married couple. So most people have this expectation. You have a married couple, and as we're trying to think about this ethically, let's deal with the classic case first. You have a married couple. The woman is unable to carry a baby to term. They want a baby. So using the husband's sperm and the wife's eggs, they are able by in vitro fertilization to come up with a conceptus, a fertilized egg. That is then implanted not in the wife, but in the surrogate mother, the gestational carrier who has been hired. She carries the baby to term, and upon birth, she hands the baby over to those who hired her to carry the baby. Now, in the very first legal case of surrogacy in this country, it wasn't the classic case. It was a case that is also very widespread, and that is that you're not using the egg from the wife of a married couple. Rather, you're using the husband's sperm and the egg of the gestational carrier, who is not only the gestational carrier, but also the biological mother, by the fact that it is her egg that is fertilized. And then, of course, you span from that. You go out into the issues of a gay male couple, single male or others that may want this. And then you have the report that's in the New York Times, again, not a conservative periodical. Back just a couple weeks ago, the New York Times reports that India is nurturing the business of surrogate motherhood. It says this, an enterprise known as reproductive outsourcing is a new but rapidly expanding business in India. Now, as I mentioned, the asterisk on the front cover of Newsweek magazine reports that there are many twists and tangles to the story. One of them is that a good number of those who are professional surrogates, gestational carriers right now, are the wives of American military personnel who have time on their hands, and they have United States government-provided insurance that actually pays for the prenatal care, and they are able to hire out their womb for rent. I want to ask you the question, what's your response to the ethics of surrogate motherhood? When we come back, I'm going to talk about my moral concerns about this practice. We're going to talk about how we as Christians should frame our understanding. And we need your help for this conversation. The phone number 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. There's a very, very interesting story here. Newsweek magazine's cover story, Womb for Rent, The Curious Lives of Surrogates. It really does take you into something that most Americans likely don't think about very often. And that is what's really going on in terms of the ethics of surrogate motherhood. Gestational carriers, that's what they prefer to call themselves now. And it's very interesting that Newsweek acknowledges that the moral concerns come from both the left and the right, from both Christian and secular concerns, and they document what these are. They suggest, rightly, that conservative Christians are very concerned about what this says about motherhood and the sanctity of life and the definition of what it means to be human. Absolutely true. We're going to get to that just momentarily. But the left is also concerned about this, even the secular left, because the commodification of motherhood is something that they see as simply one more way of abusing women, one more way of women being exploited. And especially when it comes to impoverished women who are doing this because they need money, there are many on the left who are saying this is just a form of reproductive prostitution. And that is a very interesting argument. Now, let me tell you what one of my concerns is, and let me be very upfront and honest about this. One of my concerns is that there are an awful lot of conservative Christians who would say, look, it's leading to the births of babies. That simply has to be good. Well, remember that the Christian moral concern about the sanctity of human life reminds us that every single life, every single human being, is indeed made in the image of God and is a life to be celebrated. But that doesn't mean that the means to that end are always moral. And just to make the obvious comparison here, a baby born to a couple out of wedlock is just as much made in the image of God as one that is born to a married couple. It is just as much to be celebrated in terms of the fact that it is a new creature that God has given us, a new human being, a new member of the human family. It is just as much to be protected and cherished as one made in the image of God, a fellow human creature made in the image of God, fellow human being. But that doesn't mean that we as Christians can say that it doesn't matter if the parents were married. In other words, the moral status of the act that brings the baby into life is not the same as the moral status of the life itself. And that's a long-standing Christian moral understanding and Christian principle. So you look at this and you say, well, all right, let's not look at the baby. Let's look at the means. And let's be very honest about what's going on here. It is a financial transaction. It is women who are indeed doing exactly what the cover of Newsweek magazine says. They're renting their wombs. Now, I have a concern about this that begins with how it happens. And I've written about the ethics of in vitro fertilization, or IVF. I have grave moral concerns about it. And these moral concerns just get heightened when you add the issue of surrogacy. I mean, after all, the very fact that a surrogate is mentioned means that this is someone not within the marriage covenant. This is not just the husband and the wife. There is now a third agent involved. Now, just looking at our theology of marriage, a third agent involved in reproduction is something that is alien to the biblical understanding. Now, I'm not saying that that alone just makes it a slam dunk case. I think the slam dunk case comes when you put all of the pieces together of a Christian moral understanding, because you also have here, I think, a tremendous devaluation of the role of a mother carrying a child to term. In other words, I think we as Christians understand that there is, built into what it means to be female, a certain relationship with the child that is within you. Now, that is something, quite frankly, that men do not experience, but men can envy in that sense, just knowing there's a special relationship there between the mother and the child, because after all, the child was in the mother. And you have the whole thing where the relationship there of God's knowledge and the miracle of what God is doing there, even as with David and Jeremiah, you have clear indications that they were known in their mother's womb before, of course, they were born. Well, what does it say about the relationship between the mother and the child that it's a financial transaction, even if it's done rightly or I mean, in the sense of honestly or dishonestly in terms of a kind of benefaction going on here, or the generosity of the woman. In the vast majority of these cases, regardless of her other motivations, it is a financial transaction. What does it say when that is now something that becomes a matter of hiring someone else to carry? What does it say when the mother gives birth and then hands the baby right off, given the financial transaction? I'd love to know what you think about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Newsweek magazine says Christians are concerned about this. I'd like to hear if you are. 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The question is surrogate motherhood. The issue is put before us with a cover story of this week's Newsweek magazine. There is so much here I wish we could discuss, but given the confines of time, the basic question is the morality of this. A transaction for what is now known as a gestational carrier to carry a child for another. Sometimes to conceive a child, but most classically to carry a child for another. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're talking about what this means for the reproductive ethics, what this means for the changing definition of the family, what this means for marriage, what this means for motherhood. The phone number again, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Andrew, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Andrew.
Dr. Mueller, so first of all, great discussion. The first thing I think is I'm not sure that it's entirely without biblical precedent, in that you could think about Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar. I know you can't draw the parallels too closely, but I think it's something to consider in light of what you've been discussing. Then the second one is I know, obviously, several couples who are wonderful, interested, and would love to have children who are not able to. If they were to engage in this sort of contractual relationship after careful consideration and prayer, I'm certain that I don't feel strongly enough against it that I would question that decision.
Okay, that's a very honest statement. In other words, it's not clear enough to you that you would, to use the term used by ethical theologians, you wouldn't morally interrogate the situation. You would just assume that it's stable. Now, Andrew, it's very, very interesting you mentioned Hagar. And I want to say it's very interesting for two reasons. Number one, Newsweek cites it. And let me read to you the critical paragraph here. It says here, IVF has been around only since the 1970s, but the idea of one woman bearing a baby for another is as old as civilization. Surrogacy was regulated in the Code of Hammurabi, dating from 1800 BC, and appears several times in the Hebrew Bible. In the 16th chapter of Genesis, the infertile Sarah gives her servant Hagar to her husband Abraham to bear a child for them. Now, let me tell you that, first of all, very perceptive, Andrew, you come up with that, because Newsweek cites that. But the other interesting thing here, from a Christian perspective, let's just remember that the decision of Sarah to send in Hagar is not morally celebrated in the Bible. Instead, it is treated as a lack of faith on Sarah's part that God would be faithful to the covenant that he made with Abraham. So those are the two interesting, you know, points I would get from that analogy. Number one, you're perceptive to come up with it. Number two, I don't think it helps the case for surrogate parenting from a Christian biblical perspective. It almost does exactly the opposite, because after all, what you end up with in the biblical storyline is strife between the child of Hagar and the child of Sarah, and the very act of this, if you want to call it surrogacy, being an act of unbelief, a lack of faith on the part of both Sarah and Abraham. By the way, I said this article is basically well-written. But there is one thing that I really take issue with. Just to follow the logic of Hagar, let me read to you another section of the same paragraph. It says this, "It is also possible to view the story of Jesus' birth as a case of surrogacy, mediated not by a lawyer but an angel, though in that instance the birth mother did raise the baby." Well, guess what? If the birth mother raises the baby, it's not surrogacy, so that's an absolutely inane statement that should have been caught by some editor at Newsweek magazine before that ever saw print. That's the kind of thing you don't expect to see in a news magazine of this magnitude, generally better edited than that. But nonetheless, when you look at Hagar, you are looking at that. You're looking at the old form of surrogacy. And by the way, in the old form of surrogacy, you're talking also about some form of adultery there. Because after all, We're not talking about an IVF clinic available to Abraham and to Sarah here. Thanks for your call, Andrew. To join the conversation, call us at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, when we talk about morally interrogating a question, we need to talk about it at two different levels. One of them is the getting ready to answer the question level. In other words, that's really the value of the program today. It's in getting ready to answer the question. What happens when someone comes to you and says, should I or should I not do this? Now, there are an entire range of issues that we as Christians really need to think through so that we have some kind of informed, reasoned, scripturally based answer. And, you know, if not a couple asking this question, what's going to happen when your middle schooler comes home and says, I saw the cover of Newsweek magazine, what's a surrogate mom? Mom, is it right to do that? I think that would be a very interesting family conversation. Are you ready for it? Now, I said there are two levels. The first level is the what do we think about this before someone asks us level, so we're ready to give an informed answer. The second level is what do you do when it lands on your doorstep? Because, by the way, as I keep reminding us, that's the issue with the transgender, transsexual thing. We need to be ready to have an answer when someone says, what do you think about this? But we also better have an answer because it's going to show up in your church. It's going to show up in your community. It's going to show up in ways where you're actually going to have to deal with it, not just think about it. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. In Houston, Texas, Dana is listening on XM170. Go ahead, Dana.
Yes, I was just calling. I'm a woman who cannot have children, and I would say to tell people that are in this situation, you know, I agree with your position that, you know, surrogate motherhood is wrong, and I would recommend people in this position adopt. God calls us to care for the orphans, and also we are adopted into his family through Christ, so it's a great witnessing tool.
That's a very eloquent point, Dana. And so if you'll stay with me a minute, if you can, I want to just ask you point blank, because you have mentioned the fact that you cannot have a child of your own, and you have pointed to what is morally laudable, which is adoption. And I just want to not make a statement on your behalf, but rather to make sure I can make this statement safely. And that means that you would look at the issue of surrogacy and say you just would not feel that that would be a morally appropriate decision, given your Christian convictions.
That's correct.
All right, that's very, very helpful. And I think, honestly, that when you start talking to a lot of people about this, you're going to get some different dimensions suggested as to why that should be the appropriate response. I think you're going to get many people who respond at the level of the reproductive ethic that is involved. I think you're going to get some people who are going to say, I agree with the liberals, the feminists on this, as identified in this news article, that think this is a part of the commodification of sex and reproduction. That's just not good for women. As one person says in this argument, whenever women get paid for this kind of thing, it never turns out well. For women, that is. And the article in the New York Times from India certainly seems to make that point. But, you know, I think an awful lot of people will respond to this at the level of motherhood. I think a lot of mothers will, because I already know this from personal conversation about the issue, where mothers say, I just can't imagine that it could be healthy in any sense for the mother to have a transaction related to that child that is in her womb. The womb is not a place that is to be, as the cover story of this magazine indicates, for rent. Right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, my guess is that a good number of you have seen this cover story, certainly the photograph in the front of Newsweek magazine, and even as you look at it, instantly you're drawn to know we've got to have an answer for this. We've got to think about this. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. That means we take on some of the issues that are very hard. Today on Oprah's program, believe it or not, and the more you think about it, the more you'll believe it, Oprah had on the so-called pregnant man from Bend, Oregon, that we discussed last week on this program. And we'll be looking to see if there's anything worth commenting on there. But at this point, what seems to be worthy of comment is the fact that it happened. And on Oprah, of course, in a context of total acceptance and the fact that this is simply great because it's a new sign of America's diversity and acceptance and victory over intolerance and all the rest. But the photograph that is now widespread throughout the media of this person identified as a man, who's obviously pregnant, certainly has gotten a lot of attention. And on the heels of that, just a few days later, here comes Newsweek magazine with Womb for Rent on the front, with a woman in this case playing the part of a surrogate. In fact, this is identified as surrogate mother Jennifer Cantor, who's carrying twin boys. You see the picture there. You know, the complexities of this are really something else. One of the things you discover in this article is that the financial transaction here is not only within this country, but there are people in Europe who are hiring American surrogate mothers because, again, this is the wild, wild west, as some have described it, of reproductive technology. Virtually everything is legal here. Even it is, as we said at the beginning of the program, illegal to have surrogate motherhood in much of Europe. But India is turning out to be the place where reproductive outsourcing, that's not my term, that's the term for the New York Times, is going on. And the United States is also an attractive place, it turns out, for surrogacy because there are all of these military wives who have time on their hands, especially with husbands who are in Iraq or Afghanistan, and are using TRICARE, the government-supplied insurance, health insurance program that covers maternity as well as other things in order to cover the maternity costs, which means that when it comes to surrogate motherhood, like in so many other things, if you're an American taxpayer, you're actually involved in funding it. These moral issues come to us fast and furiously. They come to us from the left and the right and the center. They come to us, well, on the cover of a magazine like Newsweek. They come to us also in conversation with our own children. They come in conversation at our church or at our neighborhood. They come to us with events that come with lightning speed within the culture and with others that appear, well, to have been here all along. The issue of surrogate motherhood has not really been here all along in the sense that it is now. New reproductive technologies, IVF and all the rest, make it something that it never has been before. And this is the time for Christians to think intelligently, carefully, and biblically about this, as well as the other issues that face us. Tomorrow, we're going to observe what it means to look back 40 years after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're going to look at the state of race in America and a Christian understanding of how to respond to that issue in these times. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.